are listening to the Cosmic Fury SG podcast. What is up, guys? Juan here. So on this episode, I'll be keeping it as casual as I can. So before we continue, as usual, the courtesy spoiler warning: this episode will be spoiler filled throughout the entire video, so let yourself be warned. So in the previous episodes, I did a first impressions mini review on Ronin Island issue number 1. So Ronin Island is created by Greg Pak and Giannis Milono Giannis. So Greg Pak is the writer and Giannis Milono Giannis is the artist on this one. And of course joined by others doing the lettering and all that. So a brief summary on what has happened in issue number 1 is that in issue number 1, they give you a brief introduction of the Ronin Island itself, consisting of the islanders and all that. So Ronin Island is a mixture of Korean people, Japanese people, maybe a little bit of Thai and other Asian people that surrounds near the mainland Japan and the islands around it. So yeah, hence Ronin Island is a mixture of like immigrants who ran away from their homelands to be on that island. So basically Ronin Island came about after an event that happened on the mainland called the Great Wind. Again, in issue number 2, they have yet to explain what exactly the Great Wind is. They just like constantly, if they were to mention it, the word or the event will always be in bold. So yeah, they have yet to explain what the Great Wind is. The Ronin Island people, the islanders, basically they have been going about their lives for quite a number of years, but they don't really explain how long that island has been around. And throughout their time being on that island, they have developed communities, they have developed their so-called culture, traditions and all that. So within that brief of time, that number of years, they have got things going on their end without disturbing the mainland itself. So one day, this samurai general called General Sato came by to their island, and then Master Ito himself, who used to be a samurai who is now the islander within Ronin Island, recognizes the sigil, or so-called, yeah, basically the seal or sigil that General Sato is carrying on his banner with his men. The thing about that sigil is that the shogun that bears that sigil has been dead for many, many years. And basically, it is puzzling for Master Ito to actually come into terms that whoever is carrying that sigil, that shogun, is somebody they do not recognize, because the original one, he served under that shogun and he has died. So General Sato coming up to the islanders and said like, "You guys need to swear your fealty to the shogun of the sigil, because a great enemy is coming, and if you don't, it'll be a great consequence." So basically they were about, you know, to get into a tussle, like, you know, someone who just comes into your house and say, you know, "You gotta serve me or you be dead." So basically that's the situation they had to handle with. And then suddenly on one of the shores, the mainland shores, which is near to the island, so-called gets a signal where they are being attacked by this mutated horde. Initially, they didn't know exactly who is coming to attack them until we go to issue number 2. Like earlier on, basically General Sato and his samurai men had to work together with the islanders of Ronin Island to go to the mainland shore, to one of the shores, to actually defend the farmers and the villagers of that shore. So basically, when they reach to the shore, that's where the action actually empties up within issue number 2. The thing about the whole situation is that even though they are trying to work together, they are still at odds, because like General Sato, being the general that he is, he demands some kind of order and discipline, like, you know, like following ranks. And basically the islanders, they don't really like this thing, because like, you know, we are our own people and we don't answer to anyone other than the elder Jin, this old lady that they are with. So pretty much they are still at odds, but they still have to work with each other. And then there's like the two young so-called kids who just about to finish their so-called trials, and Kenichi and Hana. The action comes when they actually reach the shore, and man, things are looking up. I mean, action-wise, I guess. I would say Elder Jin and General Sato, they're pretty badass. Like, there are moments that happens, like, I was like, wow, that's pretty interesting. Like, Elder Jin, she is a Korean, I believe. So, for an old lady, she sports this very weird looking kind of a sword. Like, I don't know, in Malay, you probably call it a parang, but it's like a very oversized kind of a parang. And it's a weird shaped sword. Okay, so before that, I just want to say more on this mutated horde, this very dangerous enemy. I have briefly mentioned for issue number 1. So in issue number 2, they show a little bit more on this enemy. If you are familiar with Doomsday, it is a mixture of Doomsday from the DC comics, especially the ones in Superman in the series. They kind of look like that, and their skins is a mixture of like scales and rocks and a lot of protruding parts. Like, it's either they have horns or they have spikes on the shoulders or on their spines. So they're kind of like a hybrid of that. So even though they look as it is in the series, they are still able to be stabbed, to be decapitated or dismembered. So that's where a few moments I see that Elder Jin is pretty badass. Like, she moves around, starts killing shit, like as it seems. Like, one of the villagers tells the rest who are trying to rescue is that it is impossible to kill this mutated horde. Is that they try to dismember them, they still keep on moving. So Elder Jin just takes her knives and just chop off a head of one of these monsters. Like, not as in chop off from the neck, it's like from the brain stems. Like, chop it off. And for a brief moment they thought, like, okay, killing them, striking them right in the head, like using arrows shooting through the head, like headshots, head chops, like everything stops them. But however, they come back up. Like, if there are some monsters missing a hand, missing a part of the brains, they are still moving. They rise back up and they continue their attacks. So it is pretty ravenous. Like, I wouldn't say they're exactly like zombies, they are far from zombies. Like, I don't think they need weapons. Like, they have enough sharp edges that it could kill anyone. Comparing them to zombies, I would say it is a very far comparison, because they can run. Most of the zombies don't run, but I mean, some zombies run. In every pop culture that we know. And the thing is, like, if you kill a zombie by chopping any part of their head, they will instantly go down. Like, without brain functions, zombies just do not function, just like any humans. But for this enemy in this series is that even though you chop off a part of their heads, they are still moving and just as dangerous before they get dismembered by any way. So that makes a pretty interesting enemy, because that's how dangerous they are. So I don't know, like if you really want to kill them, probably place a dynamite on them and let them explode. If they still move, then we then everybody in the series is fucked. So so yeah, that's the enemy, and that's the mutated horde that these samurais and islanders have to deal with. But the thing about that whole situation is that the most composed and the one tactically very aware of how to deal with it is actually General Sato. Like the islanders, they kind of get a brief reprieve on, okay, let's dismember them at the head and we can stop them. But once they find out that is not the case, they somehow panics a little bit. So the only person right now in that whole situation actually knows how to deal and counter the situation and actually wants to save the people on that shore, the farmers and the villagers, is actually General Sato. He's the one who is well equipped with stuff. So basically with the enemy circling around in a section, and he knows that they are in a section where the houses or villages, huts and all that is surrounding the enemy. So he gets his men, gets their arrow to lit up in fire, and shoots those arrows directly into those houses, causing a fire and eclipsing the enemy within. So tactically, General Sato knows what he's doing, because I mean he's a general, so he has, in that retrospect, it gives a notion that he has dealt with this enemy more than once at least, so he knows what he's doing. And of course, like much to the despair, most of the houses and huts were put into fire, but they had to make that sacrifice because they managed to escape as many villagers and farmers off that shore and bringing them back to Ronin Island basically. But upon reaching Ronin Island, like there is still the debate of about getting the control over Ronin Island by General Sato. So like there was a back and forth argument of like what should be done and what is the decision and all that. But of course General Sato has to make it clear that if you do not follow his orders, he will kill you. But of course, Elder Jin, being the so-called wise one, like, you know, okay, fine, like if there is a prevention to give any more bloodshed, it is best to let turn herself in, and eventually Master Ito and Elder Jin was imprisoned. So the timeline of issue number 2 does go forward a bit, about 1 month. So basically both of them are still in prison, but the island life still goes on, but in the hands of General Sato. During this whole 1 month transition period, I would say there are two things that's happening. Like the lifestyle on the island has got from a little bit carefree, more like before General Sato came along, their lives are more like much more freedom, carefree. Yes. So ever since that 1 month period, the transitional of that time, things has gone like a bit more regimental, because there are samurais and people just trying to keep things at peace. And on the other hand is that the islanders are working round the clock to more, I would say, they're setting up spikes, you know, that kind of thing to reinforce their entry points, you know, to like so-called booby trap the perimeter, so to speak, to ensure that if there is another wave of monsters coming in, they are prepared, so they have their defense line there. So pretty much these are the two things that is going on during this 1 month period so far in the timeline. So during this time when they were setting up their stuff, like Hannah and Kenichi, even though these two they are still butting heads from issue number 1 to issue number 2, they're still butting heads arguing about about what to do, this and that, like young kids being young kids still arguing. And I just want to see how their dynamic develops later on in the series, because like Elder Jin always emphasizes to Master Ito that no matter what, even in trying times, even in battle, no matter what, these two needs each other, because they function well when they are with each other, and everything they do, they need each other. So that's what Elder Jin always emphasize on. So it is interesting to see how they develop later on in the series. So while doing reinforcements of the spikes around the perimeter, two of the samurais like checking up on them, on Kenichi and Hannah. Like the samurais do recognize Kenichi because Kenichi's father used to serve the previous shogun that the samurai is carrying under their sigil. But the thing about that whole conversation is that the samurai does remind or tells of Kenichi is that his father is a traitor, a deserter, more or less. A deserter who chose to run away from the shogun. And abandoning the shogun even after the Great Wind event. So again, the Great Wind event, they emphasize the word in bold letters, but still have not explained exactly what the Great Wind event is. So of course Kenichi, who loves his dad very much, who honors his dad, just does not take the news very lightly. Because like it's all about honor for his dad, and hearing the samurai saying not so nice things about his father being a deserter and all that, of course makes Kenichi mad about it. But the only one that's level headed throughout that whole conversation is Hannah, because to her it is something that, you know, like be smart, like not take the whole situation and thinking it through emotions, because there is plans within her head to actually counter this samurai regime that's happening in their islands. So I guess in a dynamic is that like Kenichi is a guy who is always you know, coming from a rich family, is always thinking with his emotions, while Hannah is the complete opposite of him, always thinking rationale and actually the ones with the brains, even though she is the orphan one comparing to the rest of them. And so during this entire time when they are setting up their stuff, and after that conversations, from afar they seem to see reinforcements from the samurai shogun side coming to the island. But there comes the twist. The reinforcements are a bunch of horses who are affected in some sense, and they are now the mutated horde themselves. So it gets tough from there. Like the previous mutated horde that they had to deal with were mostly humanoid looking, meaning like they have hands and legs, more to their human counterparts. But for this one that's oncoming, a bunch of horses. That makes it even more interesting. Like you don't see zombie horses much. You see zombie humans, but you don't see zombie horses. So obviously the mutated horde of these horses have twice the strength of the normal horses, but still they are able to be cut down. And luckily with them managing to put defensive perimeters before this, they are well equipped to defend themselves for a time being, which is needed, very very much needed with the oncoming threat that is coming to the place. So of course, like, they try their best to hold the line, and the islanders are there and ready to hold on to their own. So pretty much, like, out of all this, like, besides the islanders, like, defending their line, the one of the very first few people that actually went into the front lines to actually help the islanders is actually General Sato. Like, he has these badass moments where, badass in a sense, like, most of the generals, like, in Japanese, like, samurai kind of like a law, is that in movies usually the generals stay behind and let the men be the cannon fodder, and when it's time, then they get in. But General Sato in this is the one of the first few, or maybe the first person in that samurai regime to actually go into the front lines to actually help the islanders defend the line. So there was this moment where he tells his men, like, you know, get to the island, get the reinforcements, and while doing so, one of the mutated horses actually knocked down his horse. So I don't know exactly if General Sato's horse died from that impact, but General Sato just got onto his feet and got ready to kick ass. Like, before this, like I mentioned about Hannah, like, being the smart one, she did have the intention of killing General Sato, and she reminds Kenichi is that, you know, always, like, not think with your emotions, and when the time comes, strike when there is an opportunity. So seeing General Sato in a situation where he is about to go down and dying, Hannah did had the intention of, you know, taking the opportunity to kill him. But then at the most, like, badass striking moment, General Sato cuts down the oncoming mutated horse that killed his own horse, and the thing just, like, you know, without any limbs or legs, like, the horse just goes down, and Hannah was like, whoa. So yeah, like, General Sato is having like the few pages in this, General Sato is like being a complete badass. So Kenichi is like, you know, like telling Hannah, like, you know, if that was part of your plan all along, like, why are you hesitating? Like, that in that instant, General Sato tells to Hannah is that, you know, these horses carry the sigil of the shogun, and that only means that the shogun's defense line has been breached, and he needs the soldier, that reinforcement, to help out on the rest of the people, and reminds Hannah, you know, if you care about the civilians, if you care about the villagers, you care about the farmers, is that the main shogun, where shogun's palace, where they have this camp, they have Koreans just like her, orphans just like her, and even having other Asians within that camp. And he tells her that if you care that much, like, you need to help us to subside this enemy, this ongoing enemy, is that, like, in that instant, Hannah hears it, like, General Sato offers an opportunity to help more people and not be so selfish about the situation, and Hannah actually sees another opportunity to actually help the situation. Like, fine, you know, two heads are better than one, and especially in that situation, Kenichi is like, why are you helping this guy? So Hannah gives a helping hand to General Sato and actually saved him, because being with the reason is that, you know, at the shogun's palace, at the camp, there are more people to be saved, and if they do not stop the enemy now and then, more people would die. So in the end, like, Kenichi did try to kill General Sato in a situation, but Hannah did stop Kenichi from doing that. So basically, the plot thickens is that, you know, Hannah, the moment where she hears about the opportunity to save more people, especially her own people who are Koreans, at the camp of the shogun's palace, like, the situation turns onto itself. if I'm saying that correctly, like, you know, General Sato, being regimental as he is, has a better vision on the whole situation. Not only that, he knows how to fight. He's a brave guy who got into the defense line, one of the first to get into there. And besides that, I guess he is a character that has to be harsh, in especially in these moments where an enemy of which it is unpredictable, more or less. And all in all, he is the one still thinking about saving people. So I don't know exactly how he will develop later on in the series. He could be just faking it for his own sake. But as for the meantime, I guess General Sato, as rough as he is, I guess he's the one that makes the most sense. Like, he has to do whatever it takes to gain control of the island because of their resources, to resupply and maintain the armies or samurais in the front lines. So, like, you can't ask nicely for somebody for resources and expect them to comply, especially when they don't know who you are. And for him to take it from their hands because he has to, I guess puts a little bit of a character, you know, an interesting kind of a character. So I guess General Sato does leave a good impression on me so far in issue number 2 for Ronin Island. And that's the end of it. So pretty much they Hana, Kenichi are at a crossroads on whether, like, Hana does want to help General Sato and Kenichi is still in doubts. And so yeah, like, pretty much that's the end of issue number 2 for Ronin Island. And yeah, I basically have spoiled the entire issue for this episode. So yeah, do I like the issue number 2 for Ronin Island? I guess those badass moments did caught me off guard, and I appreciate those moments because I think they're pretty cool. And pacing wise, it is the same as the impressions I gave on issue number 1. It's okay. And because the story is pretty simple, it's straightforward, but it's pretty fast. Like, I finished reading this, I think, less than 10 minutes because it was that fast. Like, I guess drawing wise, it's still, I mean, it's a bit cartoony, but the moments, the stories, the story itself carries it quite well, that I don't mind about the drawing being a bit cartoony and whatnot. Moments like General Sato and Elder Jin, like, chopping heads and taking names, that is awesome to see. So issue 2 has been out for quite a while. So it's released by Boom Studios. So if you guys ever have the opportunity to get this series, you can still probably get it physically, or you can get it digitally on all those established comic apps on Google Play Store and all that. So yeah, if you guys are into the samurai era of Japanese culture, with a mixture of fighting mutated hordes, I guess check it out, you know. So I think this is a short video, I guess. Pretty much that's it. This is a spoiler-filled episode of me talking about Ronin Island issue number 2. So pretty much that's it. I'm one. So, starting off.